Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm a feminist, but backstage here at Chichester Festival Theatre, I was slightly tempted to try on a Nazi uniform from The Sound of Music. I was also tempted to try on the Lederhosen. I just love costumes, not Nazis. I did actually try on a nun's habit for a second, and the jury's out on whether that's feminist or not. In some ways it is, because women who went into nunneries and convents often were avoiding marriage and more... In some eras, that was the only other thing you could do. And loads of lesbians went into convents to try and avoid men and find women.
Yeah. I think being a nun is like the punkest thing you can ever do. I was filming...
What?
Yeah, I do.
The punkest thing you can ever do?
No. Okay, that was an exaggeration.
Because I think being a punk rocker is probably,
The punkest thing that you could ever do, yeah. No, I got a bit excited because I'm here. No, it's because I was filming in Rome a couple of years ago and they love it there. I don't know if you know. They absolutely can't get enough.
What, nuns?
They just love it, like Catholicism. Like, they're big into it in Rome. You genuinely look confused.
Yes, I'm telling you.
And I saw these nuns who were just playing football in their little sandals. And I was like, that is one of the punkest things.
Sorry, were you not playing a footballing nun while you were there?
Yeah. Oh, I was playing a nun in a film. But it wasn't me that was playing football. I was watching these nuns play football.
Yeah, but in the football, wasn't the film about football though?
Yeah.
And you were a nun?
Yeah, it was a football coach. The film isn't out yet. This means absolutely nothing to any of you.
What's the film called when it comes out?
It's called The Beautiful Game. And it'll be out on Netflix, I think, one day. But we filmed it 2 years ago. That's what it's like in the industry right now. But yeah, I saw these nuns playing football and I thought that was like very cool.
Yeah.
That is punk, I think.
Are there any nuns in Chichester?
Wow.
Only backstage here, I see. Well, there's certainly no nuns in by the sound of it. There's not a convent here, is what I'm saying. There used to be. You said that with an ominous tone.
There used to be.
We closed it down.
We ran them out. We just them and their football.
We just knocked on the door and said, no, we won't be having that here. The nuns closed it down.
So they had enough of you guys.
There weren't enough nuns to keep it operative. Yeah, because women have other opportunities now. I think that's what's happened.
Yeah.
No, I do think that's mostly what's happened, is women have gone, I can be a teacher or a nurse without being a nun, and I can also don't have to get married without being a nun as well now.
Yeah. I'm a feminist, but last Tuesday night, as I was hunched over my toilet, throwing up everything that was in my stomach, I'd been feeling super nauseous all day and was violently sick all night. My life flashed before my eyes, though it wasn't strictly my life. It was kind of like a roll call of the bottom of the barrel of men I've dated. Like, every rubbish, useless Harry, Dean, I've dated a Dean, Jake, like, all of them just flashed before my eyes. And I thought, Susan, right, this is what you get for starting therapy, developing boundaries, and having high standards and self-worth, a lonely death. They don't tell you that. They don't tell you that in therapy, that as soon as you start acquiring any self-worth, it is a guarantee that you'll die alone. They keep that quiet.
You might meet a man worthy of you.
No. No, 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 no.
Fair enough. I'm a feminist, but tonight I made my husband go back to the hotel to get my heels and eyelashes because I didn't feel I could go on stage and be the ringmaster of a feminist show without them. But I think you'll find it was worth it. Eyelashes. Yeah. Shoes. People always say, you look like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz in these shoes, and you should click your heels and go home. But who wants to be home in these shoes? Is what I respond.
All right, this is a controversial one. It might be, I don't know. I'm a feminist, but turns out I still don't give a shit about football, even when it's women. I don't care. I will die on this hill.
You it literally wax lyrical about nuns.
Yeah.
Playing football while you were in a movie about football.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. I will take the money. I will pretend. But no, I'm but judging it the whole time.
You enjoyed a nun doing a header.
Yeah. There's just something, I'm a feminist, but it's something cute about nuns, like, kicking a ball around. No, I hate football. It's so silly. And I think what it is, And, like, you see people, here we go. You see people get so passionate about it, and they're, oh, my God, football. I don't care. It doesn't matter. Also, I'm not talking about, like, countries or any country. If you get obsessed about football, you're a numpty. And it's like when people, like, they get so excited and they've got, like, a vein in their forehead and they're like, football has solved immigration and war. And you're just like, you're stressing me out. Just, like, have a chamomile tea and relax. It just feels like everybody will just avoid doing the actual work of, like, solving the world's problems, but they'll look to football and be like, they've done it, they scored a goal, it's all done, no more racism, it's all done, we're all together, in it together. And it's just, I would love football more if it was just entertainment. If we were just like, oh, a football match, how lovely. But the fact that people sort of, like, attach so much to it, I'm like, it hasn't solved feminism. It hasn't. Like, it hasn't given us, you know, it hasn't solved the gender pay gap or anything like that. We lost as well. So, like, will women ever get it right?
I think them losing in a final is them striving for equality with the men's team. I think they won and everyone went, oh, we don't know what to do with that because it's not the men. But yeah, good. And this time they went, will you like us as much as the men if we disappoint you? Like, if we lead you down this garden path and you've still got something to hope for next time? I think they did it on purpose. I think they threw it because no one responded well enough when they won the Euro.
No one cared.
I think they just went, fuck you. We're going to do exactly what the men do. We're going to disappoint you. We're going to lead you right to the final and disappoint you. And, you know, that's equality. That's gender equality.
That is a silly game. All of that just for kicking a football. Like, I don't get it.
Who watched it though?
Was that a man?
Well, we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to gender anybody, but was that a man? That was a man. Okay, great. And did you enjoy the Lionesses? You loved it. Oh, that's lovely.
Of course he did.
I don't know why am I going...
I don't even know what I meant by that comment, actually. I'm just wry as fuck today.
I don't know why I'm giving you extra kudos for enjoying it as a man, because women have to enjoy men things all the time. But I'm delighted that you did. The bar's lower. What do you mean? For men? Yeah, you're not telling us anything we don't know, sir. Thank you for that endorsement, but we were aware. It's true. It is true. If a man says he's a feminist, often my audience, if I talk to a man in the audience, they say he's a feminist, my audience will go, oh. And I'm like, oh, they applaud. I'm like, don't applaud that. All he's done is say it. He hasn't done anything that we know of. You're all here. Why are we applauding it? But we like you. What's your name? Lot.
Lot. I like you a lot now. Mm. Again, don't know why I said that.
You, Lot. Yeah, okay. What do you do, Lot? You're with the what? The Office of National Statistics. Do you have any good feminist statistics for us?
No good ones.
No good ones. Not. But
it's
isn't there something
bad,
like,
bad, bad.
Can't you statistically prove that women are better but treated worse? Go and work on that and come back to this show when you have. Thank you, Lot. Are you still here? You shouldn't be. You should be out the door. I'm a feminist, but now I have to set this up by telling you, and I'm a feminist, but I did a couple of shows ago, because it hasn't gone out yet, but you'll see why. So this is the original one I did, and there's an add-on now. I'm a feminist, but I found out recently when sleazy men check out or try to talk to my goddaughter, she loves telling them, I'm 13. Because it freaks them out and they run away. So now I use it. So I was walking up this escalator on the tube, because I'm trying to get my steps in, you know. And a man just went, oh, nice ass. And to be fair to him, I have a nice ass. But
it's lovely.
No, I have a large ass, and that's come into fashion, thank God. It'll only be in for 25 minutes, but I'm enjoying it. So I just turned around and I just thought, I'm going to try this. And I just turned around and went, I'm 13. And I stopped walking up the escalator and he didn't know what to do. Because I think in his eyes, he was looking at me like, are you one of those people with an aging disease? Like, he just didn't. Because some, you know, there's a whole musical about a teenager who looks like a grown up. And he just didn't know what to do. So we just stared him out till we got to the top of the escalator and then he just walked away quickly. So I told this to an audience, and I said, could you all try it? Because I want to do, like, a national, nay, global campaign to, like, freak out men who are, like, intimidating women. And so I was so surprised how quickly I got back messages. I told everyone, email goodsfeminist@gmail.com or slide into my DMs, and people did. I got an amazing message from a woman who said she was catcalled by a man who just went, I would, and she turned around and said, I'm 13. And she said, I'm 24, but admittedly, I do look quite young. And he said, are you okay? I'm worried you're out alone, because it was midnight. He said, I didn't realize that someone might attack you. And I said, well, you could help create an environment where women aren't frightened of being attacked by not shouting out things to intimidate women. And he said, I'm sorry, I was only joking. I just wanted you to know you're fit. And she said, assume women know they're fit. And he said, are you really 13? And I said, yes. Is that good? It's too good. This is another one. A man sat next to me on the tube when there were other seats available. You know, I don't know if you know, Chichester, but in London, that's illegal. If there's a whole row of seats open, you don't come and sit right next to somebody. That's just illegal. It's Mm-mm. just how it works. But that wasn't it. That's, you know, it's not actually illegal. It's just not, it's just... morally wrong.
It should be.
But he sat next to me, and a man sat next to me on the tube when there were other seats available and said, where are you going? And I said, I'm 13. And that's my mum. And I pointed at another woman on the train the same age as me. I'm 35. And the other woman laughed and said, yeah, I am. He got up and moved to the other end of the carriage and said nothing, but then quickly started looking at his phone. It's such a good strategy, isn't
it?
Good. Isn't that funny? Is that funny? I feel like we can start a global movement. But the only thing is we have to rope the actual 13s in.
Yeah.
Because otherwise men won't be confused who do this. But I don't know how moral it is to ask 13-year-olds to do it. But then 13-year-olds, they're only saying the truth. What else are they going to say? I'm 13. But I think the blanket policy is, and I don't care how old you are. In fact, the older you are, the better. I'm 13. And you just have to hold it and you never admit that you're not. You never take it back.
Yeah.
And if they ask for ID, you just say, I'm a child. I don't have ID. I think it's a good strategy, guys. I think men are going to get so scared to just...
So
just gonna,
scared.
Oh, I don't know who's 13 and who's not. I'm just going to leave it.
Excellent. I'm a feminist, but the best thing about the Barbie movie was Ryan Gosling.
I haven't seen it yet, but I really hope you're proved wrong. Just give
I'm
a cheer
not.
If you've seen the Barbie movie. Give us a cheer.
And give a cheer who agrees with me. Okay, it's not as fortified as I thought. He was great. He was really funny and brilliant. And I felt bad about it. I felt bad the whole time.
Yeah,
that
that's
I was
why
like,
you're
he wasn't on screen. And I was like, where is he?
Yeah, that's why you're confessing. That's why it's a confession.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I've had two comedians say, I'm a feminist, but I haven't seen the Barbie movie yet. And I'm like, what point of history are we at? We're not seeing a movie about Barbie is in any way construed as unfeminist. The world is fucked. Is there any point in trying? Should we all just go to the pub? One person went, yeah. Everyone else is like, there. No, feminism. If you think no feminism, just cheer. If you want to go to the pub, just cheer.
Wow,
oh my
everyone
God,
is
Chichester! You have to have more fortitude for feminism than that.
You guys
bloody hell. No, we're not going to the pub. We're staying in later now. This is feminist detention. Live from the Chichester Festival Theatre, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis White, guest co-host Susan McComa, and the cast and director of the new play, Never Have I Ever, talking about this. Oh my God! Thank you so much. This is our first time in Chichester ever. That sounds like you've been waiting for us to come. You're like, where have you been? Give us a cheer if you listen to The Guilty Feminist. Give us a cheer if you don't know what you're at. About 50-50. But you will notice that second lot of cheers sounded less empowered. Less feminist, if you will. Don't worry. By the time you've left here tonight, you will be up to the brim with feminism. Lock the doors. It's not a cult. I was in a cult when I was younger, and I'm always worried about accidentally starting one. It's not going well so far, I'll be honest. Thank you so much for coming out and seeing us here in Chichester at The Guilty Feminist, live on the set of The Sound of Music. The hills are alive. I mean, I have worn virtually a dirndl for the occasion. I am absolutely loving it. I'm loving being on this set. This is a very feminist musical about a woman who escapes from a convent, wraps a very high-status older man around her finger, and then outsmarts some Nazis. As far as I'm concerned. Based on a true story, you guys. Based on a true story. I know a lot about it because once I was in Salzburg and I insisted on going on the Sound of Music tour with my husband, who only came because it was raining. He honestly said, I'm not coming with you. And then it started raining. I said, are you going to stand in the street in Salzburg in the rain on your own rather than come with me? And he went, oh, all right. But then he ended up loving it because the tour guide was very snarky. And he would say things like, on the left-hand side, you can see a mountain that looks like an elephant. There's something you don't see every day, unless you're me. And then you do. every single day. And Tom got right on board. We got taken to the gazebo, the I'm 16 going on 17 gazebo, but you can't do the dance in it because they've locked it up because people get breaking ankles. That's true. That's true. That's the less feminist part of that musical, isn't it? I need someone older and wiser telling me what to do. Fuck off, Nazi. That was a Nazi. That was a Nazi going, oh, I am 17 going on 18. I'll take care of you. By being a Nazi. No. On Nazis, we are not allowed to step further forward than here on the stage tonight. Sometimes I come into the audience and touch people with their consent, hashtag consent. It's a feminist show. But we're not allowed to because we've been told that to think of this, I don't know if you can see, there's a huge hole here, to think of it as the patriarchy, and if we step forward, we'll just get sucked into it like that. It's actually, I think, where the children run from the Nazis in the show. I don't know, I imagine. If the fascists come to the door, we'll all just run down there and hope for the best, sing about our favourite things. But yeah, it's very dangerous. So I can't come to you and you can't come to me, but that won't stop me talking to you, for anybody who was hoping it would. Just give us a cheer if you think you've got a feminist job. All right. So there's some people there who are very keen about their unfeminist. Yes! Nearly everyone in my audience has a feminist job in one way or the other. I know this because over the years I've done market research, and I'll tell you who my audience is. They divided into three groups. One, people who are doing something sort of directly feminist, something in literacy, working with refugees, something with women's services. Second group is people who are just generally making the world a better place, climate change, NHS. And the third group is people who are doing PhDs about Virginia Woolf. It's true. It's true. Anyone here doing a PhD about Virginia Woolf? Anyone here doing a PhD? Yeah, of course. It's just never happened that someone is... What's your PhD on? Angela Carter, yeah. So basically the same. So basically the fucking same. Thank you very much. Anyone doing another PhD? Who else is doing a PhD? Yeah. Yes, I'm going to be a feminist doctor. What's yours on? Climate change, of course. That's the double, baby. That's the double. You are straddling my Venn diagram of audience. You know, I'll tell you what, Ricky Gervais can't throw a paper plane and think, oh, I'll hit someone, it'll change the world. And I had someone in the audience the other night who said, oh, my PhD is in curing cancer. I honestly think the average guilty feminist audience, we could just lock the doors and fix 25% of the world's problems within about 48 hours. We will not lock the doors. We understand how it works. But also, the Sound of Music people would be in just singing over the top of us. Climb every mountain. Mind you, that might inspire us. Who else? Who else is doing a PhD? What's yours in? Oceanography. So you're saving the world in another way. Are you saving the oceans? Kind of. Okay, I'm going to ask you, and I want you to answer the way a man would answer if he was doing a BA or a Bachelor of Science in oceanography. So are you saving the world in a different way? Definitely. Thank you very much. That's right, that's right. What particular part of oceanography are you doing? Coral reefs, so you really are saving the world. Coral reefs, because that's the whole thing, isn't it? Coral reefs, if coral reefs go, we don't know what will happen, they say. Coral reefs, because they provide the life for the ocean. Is that true? Yeah. What was that? 25% of marine biodiversity is in coral, so if you don't save it... It's a lot of pressure, isn't it? Puts into perspective what we all do, except for that one who's doing the environment. That's, yeah. Anybody think they've got a more feminist job or another feminist job? 1, 2, 3? Yes? What's yours?
I'm the chair of Chichester Labour Party.
The chair of Chichester Labour Party. Liking up? Do you ever get to talk to Keir Starmer? Because I've got some things to say. He's my MP, but you might have more access. I don't know. He is my MP. Come to conference. I am coming to the conference. I'm doing some kind of amnesty thing there. I'm doing an amnesty event at the conference that apparently he's invited to. So I will be saying some things about human rights. This is probably a conversation for the bar. But I would like to chat to you about how you think it's all going. If Labour get in, as I very much hope they do, how much do you think the horror will shift?
Because I'm just a bit worried that he's not going, yes, we will overturn the immigration bill. Yes, we will overturn the policing bill. Yes, we will allow you to be noisy and annoying at a protest. Just the fucking definition of a protest. A quiet, calming, unirritating protest is just afternoon tea. I don't understand what they think a protest is. It's an inconvenient noise. Jesus fucking Christ. And I don't feel Keir Starmer saying the right things to me at the moment. Not directly to me. I don't WhatsApp him. But do you have his WhatsApp? Because I would like it. Join me to a group. I promise to be... I don't promise anything, honestly. I couldn't get it out. I couldn't get it out. But you feel... I mean, it's got to be somewhat better, hasn't it? Okay, thank you, yeah. If you were listening at home, I don't know what your name is. What's your name?
Claire
said, it's going to be better. It has to be better, but let's not pretend because they fucked us all. Is that correct? And not in a good way. Yes, I've had more comfortable fucks, I'll say that, yeah. It's a rebuilding process. Okay, well, let's hope. Anybody think they've got an unfeminist job? Give us a cheer. Yes, there were more last time. Now I'm talking directly to you. People are taking it back. Well, who's the woo-hoo there?
I'm a professional celebrant doing weddings and funerals.
A professional celebrant doing weddings and funerals. Why is that unfeminist?
Well, it's not particularly feminist.
It's not very feminist. Why? Well, we've all got to have a funeral. I mean, it's my woman's right to have a funeral, isn't it? And if I wish to get married, do you think that the idea of marriage is a bit outdated, or you just think it's...
I think that people are looking for some form of ceremony,
mm-hmm.
where maybe it might be more feminist not to subscribe to that.
Okay, you're thinking people are looking for some form of ceremony, but it might be more feminist not to have any ceremony at all and just to live in...
Make your commitment
daily. Yes, okay, we'll stop then. Is it just how you make your living?
No, I enjoy the fun of it. I like doing what people want to do and express themselves.
You enjoy the fun and you like people doing what they want to do and having the fun.
And it's better than being a head teacher.
It's better than being a head teacher. I feel there's a story there. Is that what you were doing before? Oh, okay. So now you just do the bit where you call everyone to attention, but this time they fucking listen. I get it. Anyone else got an unfeminist job? I don't think that's an unfeminist job. I think that's... Yes, you've got an actual... Can you be more unfeminist than that? Yes? You work for a capitalist organisation in Washington, D.C. That takes away jobs from women. Well, they've turned. Come on. I don't want to assume your pronouns. Are you... She? She. What's your name? Liz Ree. Lisri with an N. Where's the N? Oh, Nisri. Okay, thank you. I thought Lisri with an N. That's a silent N. In which case, why are we mentioning it? Nisri. Oh, you've got a mic there now. Well done. Thank you very much. So, can you give the mic to Nisri with an N? No. I mean, it is an unusual name. I would have used a pseudonym. I mean, if I were you, if I were called Nisri, I'd just always standard practice pseudonym. Surely.
Okay.
Nisri with an N?
Yes, that's me.
Okay, great. So how does it take jobs away from women?
Well, I work for the International Monetary Fund, and it is a capitalist organisation that funds...
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yes. A lot of governments, and their money doesn't really go to protect jobs, it goes to protect governments.
I see. And can I ask you this? In that role, do you do any stealth feminism?
I do a lot.
Do you?
A lot all the time.
A lot all the time, and this is what I find. This is what I find. Invariably, women who say, no, my job's not feminist, are doing secret Trojan horse feminism. And they stay in the role because they think, can you give us an example of some secret Trojan horse feminism you're doing?
So when the economists like me, PhD economists, go to countries, very small countries like Niger at the moment, which has a coup, we actually end up meeting with non-government organisations, labour unions, feminist organisations, and we tell them lot of secrets. To talk to governments.
Oh my God. And not so you're a feminist spy. You're a feminist spy.
We really do arm them with a lot of information so then they can go and talk to their governments. And they
oh my God, amazing. You're like James Bond, but good. Israel, I'm loving that. Is it okay to put your name on the podcast? We can do another take for the recording where you say your name is like Alice.
I'm trying to get everybody in DC to listen to your podcast.
Oh, good luck.
I don't mind. You can put my name on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll come when you've got enough of them listening. Just email me at guiltyfeminist@gmail.com and we'll come and do a show there. We've done one tour of America just before the pandemic and then we couldn't do any more and I got busy doing other things. But I do want to come back and then we'll come to DC. But we'll connect directly with you. Maybe you can be a guest on the show and talk about all your stealth.
Maybe you can come to the IMF.
I would absolutely love to. I'm not very interested in constantly preaching to the... You have to preach to the choir to keep the choir, like, motivated. But I also do want to talk to the devil. So I'm in. I'm right there. I'm right there in with you. And do you want to do another take where you give a different name, or are you okay with your real name?
No, I really don't mind. I want to get for it.
I want to get far. I mean, the hills are alive. You're like Maria von Trapp. She wanted to get fired too. She was always late. She was always up a mountain thinking about a boy going, my days are numbered at this convent. Let's be honest. I'm not marrying Jesus. Let's be honest. She was never going to marry Jesus. All right. Well, I'm loving that. Thank you so much for coming out live, and it's time to start the show. Would you like to meet my incredible co-pilot for this evening? She's one of my very favourites, and I know one of your very favourites too. If you listen to The Guilty Feminist, put your hands together and make incredible woo-hooing noises, break laws if necessary, to welcome the wonderful Susan McComber! Come take a seat, Susan.
I know, I can't. Hi, everybody. Oh, stop it, fans.
I hope you're all coming to the play. Are you all coming to the play we're doing here? Does everyone know there's a play? Just cheer if you don't know there's a play here. Excellent.
This side.
Yeah. You're the ones we can sell tickets to. Yeah. Excellent. So, Susan.
Yes.
How are you enjoying Chichester so far? You've not been here long.
I haven't been here. I've been here since 6 p.m. yesterday. And so far, everyone's been super friendly. There was that man that we saw.
Oh, yes.
Really, really late. We were sort of talking amongst ourselves going, where is the theatre? And this man out of nowhere, it's about 10 p.m.
We thought he was going to hit on us.
I thought,
We're from London.
We're from London, which...
We assumed he was going to steal our bag or hit on us, but what did he do?
He went, the theatre is just down this way. And we both were just stunned.
We were just like, what do you want?
And he was like, I want to help you.
Yeah.
So, so as long as it keeps on that train, I'm delighted. Yeah.
He was a lovely, friendly, local Chichester man. Is it always like that here? Yeah. Oh, well, we'll stay. We're contractually obliged to anyway, but we now want to as well. Is this a town of high achievers? Because you just never know how it's going to go. I'll tell you what. I'll tell you the town of the most high achievers I've ever been to.
Where?
You remember when we did the RSC? I don't know if you... Were you with us? I don't think you were. We did the RSC at Stratford...
No.
Fucking hell, man.
That felt like a laugh of rivalry. That's what that felt like. So,
Stratford upon Avon. I'll tell you, it's just a town full of head girls. Now, I enjoyed it, don't get me wrong. But I'm interested to see how you measure up. It's true. People always leave comedy shows going, oh, I liked that one. I thought that one was good and that one did. But what you need to know is comedians also judge audiences. You go away going, they weren't as good as Portsmouth.
Oh, now you've gone and done it. Now you've gone and done it.
I won't be saying that about you. I'll be saying they left Portsmouth in the dust, obviously. Tom, can you cut that out? I don't want Portsmouth hearing and taking it on me when I go back there. I should say, this is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists and our hypocrisies and insecurities, which... undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White. With me is Susan McComber, and tonight we are talking about the themes and our feminist themes of our new play, Never Have I Ever.
which we will be performing here in Chichester, but we'll be having a deep dive feminist discussion, but not before we've had some ridiculous lols. Okay, so first, would you like to see some stand-up comedy? Then please welcome to the stage the incredible Susan Wacoma!
Oi, oi. Okay, if you've listened to the podcast before and heard me on it, you know that I'm not a stand-up comedian per se. What I tend to do is just get on stage and tell you about all my really embarrassing life stories, and then I meet people on the street who go, hey, you've got massive fanny lips.
That's happened.
That's something we discuss. Body positivity. But I genuinely had someone say, yeah, you're the one who... Yeah, anyway, I've said it. I'm not going to say it twice. I'm not going to say it twice. Now you all know that. Every time. I'm a serious somebody. So it's been a year. It's been about a year since I last co-hosted. I think the last one was at the Wilderness Festival a year ago. It was very fun, really, really fun. And I love coming back. I love coming back because I feel like the podcast is kind of my barometer of making good decisions. It keeps me in check. I meet you guys and you inspire me and you make me laugh and you're brilliant and you're very nice to me. And every time I'm away from it, I find myself making either rash decisions or sometimes some questionable ones. So I was thinking last night about some of the things I've done in this year, and I'm just going to do a roll call. Number one, I fell in love twice, which probably means that I wasn't in love, was it? One was with a jazz musician for a month, and the other one was with a dancer for 3 months. So it wasn't love. It wasn't love, but it felt like it. So that was bad. Don't do that. Second thing that I did, I got my nipple pierced twice. Not each one, the same one. I'll walk you through it. Firstly, by sound of whoops, who has a nipple piercing? Okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, just shout the number. How painful it is it? Like, 10 being really painful. Did someone say 2? You absolute badass. I wept like a baby when they did it twice. So basically, the first time I went, I've wanted one for years. I think they're beautiful and great, and Rihanna has one. Rihanna also had a mullet. I did that. I did that as well. So I've always wanted one, but I've always been told it's really, really painful, super painful. But I thought, no, I'm 34. I'm going to do this. So I went in somewhere really, really posh. And, you know, I was going to spend the money. I was going to do it right. And the person who was assigned, it was a woman, who was assigned to do my piercing. The moment I looked at her, I went, uh-oh. You know someone who's just like Charlie Chaplin? She sort of walked in the little piercing room like, whoa, 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 oh my God, I'm so sorry, I'm just going to get the needle. I was like, oh my God, Susan, just get out. Like, it's that very, very British thing when somebody gives you like a shit mince pie and you eat it anyway and you say thank you as well and you're not having a good time. That was basically what I did with my piercing. So she sort of arrived and she tripped up and she was genuinely, I'm not even joking, she was really, really kind of all over the place. But I lay there and she did it and one side looked great, that sort of entrance point of the needle. The other side was just skew whiff. It was like pointing up to me through my areola. So that's not what they're meant to look like. I looked down at that and I thought that's going to cause me some problems. But I paid her. I did a curtsy. And I left, and then 3 months later, I went back, and they were like, you're going to have to take that out. And so we took it out, and I got it done again. And I'm happy to report that it is in a straight line. So, that was painful. The other rash thing that I did was I agreed to do Taskmaster. I did. It's not out yet. Don't worry. If you're all like, I haven't seen you, it's because it's later next month. I'm, again, not a comedian, but they asked me, and I was like, that'll be fun. And it was. It was the best time of my life. I can't talk too much about it. But if anybody is familiar with the show, there's a point where all the contestants are sort of sat, and you're watching clips of yourself. And
And I always thought that I was, I don't know about you guys, but I always thought that I was like a really smart, I don't know, sexy, sensual, incredible, sensible person. And I was just watching these VT clips of myself like, who the fuck is that? Just yelling and leaping like I was Tigger, going, yay, yay, yeah, I just want to punch myself in the face. So yeah, I now know that I'm not any of the things that I thought I was, so that was good. And that will be on national television forever. So that's good. And then the other rash thing that I decided to do was I decided to freeze my eggs. Yeah, go me. Choices. By Sound of Whoops, who else has frozen their eggs? If you want to share that information, by Sound of Whoops. Okay, all right. It's something, isn't it? It is quite a process. Now, I've never been one for children. I love kids, but me, myself, I never ever really saw myself becoming a mother. But what happened last year is I had about 4 girlfriends all decide, I want to be a mother, the time is now, and they've all done it solo. And it was a really, really beautiful thing to be a part of, to witness, because you were seeing these women who knew it was their calling. And that's the thing that I've always struggled when it comes to parenthood is, you know, people sort of going, the next step is kids. And I'm like, that's a lot, because you're bringing a whole human being into the world. Like, the idea that someone sees it as a vocation was really, really beautiful and moving to me. And it made me think, you know, that's kind of how I would do it. I'd want to feel like it was my vocation and the thing that I needed to do. So within 2 weeks, I decided to freeze my eggs because would you trust that person with a baby? I don't think I would, but I was like, sure, let's do it. I've got no dependents yet. So I went along to the clinic and I met this doctor. He was fit. He was so fit. And he was there mansplaining to me about my anatomy. And I was like, fair fucks, because I knew nothing. Turns out I know nothing about my body. That's crazy. So mad. Okay. One fact. This is the fact that blew my mind. And actually, I think quite a lot of people knew this, but I didn't. Did you know that you are born with all the eggs you'll ever have? Yes. Right, it's just me then. Again, see, you all were like, Susan, you should definitely have kids. You're so wonderful. No, because I'm sick as pig shit. So probably a good idea that I'm not doing it. But yeah, I never knew that, which means I was like, sat there as this really fit doctor was telling me, and I was like, whoa, that's crazy. So that means that when my grandmother was a little baby, the egg that would become my mother was inside my grandmother baby person. And I thought, that explains generational trauma passed down from the women. So anyway, I had my consultation and I thought, yeah, like, I'm ready to do this. I think that this is a really smart thing to do. I'm in my 30s. And so you have loads of scans. You make sure that everything is okay. And then you start the injections. And these injections are to stimulate the follicles in each of your ovaries. So when you normally have your period, it's just one follicle, one egg, bish, bash, bosh, it's gone. But this time, they're trying to stimulate as many as possible. So that means a lot of chemicals. A lot of chemicals, a lot of hormones. Yeah, we all know what's coming. But I did my first injection just before the Comedy Awards. I don't know if anybody's seen the Comedy Awards on television. I was on there, and I won an award, Best Breakthrough Star. Yes, I've been on television. Yeah. Thank you. I've been on television since I was 14, 35. But we're breaking through, baby. Oh, not better. I shared it with Lenny Rush, who is legitimately 13. So, yeah, no, it's cool. It's cool. So I did my injections, got dressed up, went to the Comedy Awards, and I felt powerful because you've got to do these self-administered injections. And I'm pretty good with needles, but I was like, yeah, God, I'm just a boss woman. Look at me go in, and no one knows. Nobody knows what I'm doing. I'm taking control of my life. A week later,
One week later, I was stood in a little car park screaming at a trolley. I'm not even joking. I tripped over the trolley. I turned to it and I started screaming. That is what this does to you. That's what it does to you. And then also, so whilst you're doing these injections, you have these scans every other day. So you've really got to clear your diary. You've really got to just commit to having all these scans. And Fit Doctor told me about my anatomy a little bit more. He was like, oh, your left ovary is quite hidden. And I was like, should I be scared? And he was like, no, everybody's bodies are different. And your left ovary is kind of, it's just a little bit, just sort of hiding. And I was like, oh my God, have I got a kooky left ovary? That's just hiding. And so what he needed to do in order to get the scan of it is that he just had to gently encourage it into view, which meant, oh, has anyone had their ovary pushed by a man? It's the most painful thing. It was so painful that when he did it, I farted, then blacked out. Can you see what I meant about embarrassing myself? Someone's going to come up to me, "Oi, you farted," and then black. I'll be like, "Yeah, that's me." So I don't know if anybody's fainted. Anybody's fainted before? Imagine you're about to faint, and the last thing you hear is your own fart. That's what happened. Like, oh my God, done. Fit Doctor's looking at me. So that was good. That was really, really good. And then also one thing, like big thing that they say. Okay, you're going to be injecting all this stuff into you. You're going to be creating all these amazing follicles with all these eggs. What we have to stress, Fit Doctor's telling me this, what we have to stress, Susan, is that you must refrain from having sex. You must. Because think about it. If you're developing all these eggs at the same time, you go and have sex, you might have a litter. Like a dog. And for someone so on the fence, imagine me be like, I got 10. I guess we're the Von Trapps now. Let's do this. So I had to be careful. But you know what? I'm the kind of person that if you tell me not to do something, all I want to do is that bloody thing. I didn't, because I'm not willing to ruin my life. I didn't do it. But I was very horny. So that meant that I was just walking around London, screaming at trolleys, being really horny. I remember I was sat at a bus stop and I saw two pigeons getting it on. You know when they get very big and just a bit creepy and they're just like... And I was watching them and I got jealous. Got jealous watching two pigeons. I was like, oh gosh, that'll never happen to me. So yes, so I did that. And then as soon as I got to sort of voyeuristic pigeon sex time, it was around that time that I was due my egg retrieval. So you get put under general anaesthetic and have the retrieval. All went really well. I was very, very looked after. And I thought, as I was coming to, and I was lying there and thinking, gosh, you know, this is... It was very emotional. I'm joking about it, but it was a very, very emotional thing. You're thinking a lot about kind of your own childhood, your experiences, the why don't I have this calling? You know, why have I put myself through this? Why have I spent all this money? Like, you know, you're thinking all these things. And I just thought, you know, okay, yes, this was a very rash decision, one that I am very lucky that I can financially make. I know that there are loads of people who would love to have this process so desperately and they can't, and I acknowledge my privilege. But I just thought, you know what? Even if I decide that motherhood isn't for me, I know that there is a desperate lack of eggs for people who wish to have black or mixed race children. And so I know that even though this has been rash and a little bit crazy and I've been watching pigeons from bus stops, I know that if it isn't my destiny, I will donate these eggs to people who it's their calling to be parents. Thank you so much for listening to Chichester.
Susan McCover, everybody! Wow. That puts a whole new spin on the term pigeon fancier.
I didn't
but, even know there was a term.
Yeah. But I love the idea of you giving
pigeons.
Well, no, giving your eggs away to people who need eggs, but then there'll be like little Susan McComas running around.
I know. And just from the evidence I've given from my lack of just general knowledge, that's not a great thing, is it?
No, it is. We would need more Susan McComas in the world, in my opinion. There you go. See, the Chichester audience concur.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, Guilty Feminists. This is Deborah. We're recording more live episodes of The Guilty Feminist and Global Pillage at the London Podcast Festival on Saturday the 16th and Sunday the 17th of September. For tickets to any of these, go to guiltyfeminist.com and click on live shows. Except if you want to go to the play, and then I want you to go to cft.org.uk. You can also get ad-free episodes via Patreon, Apple Podcasts or Acast Plus. And if you're passing iTunes or Spotify and you felt like leaving us a 5-star review, we'd love you forever. It really does help people find the podcast, as does subscribing or following. And now, back to the podcast.
Hello, Chichester. Are you ready for a little bit more Guilty Feminist? Then please welcome to the stage your hosts, Deborah Frances White and Susan McComas. Hello, 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 and welcome back. Did you have a good interval? Yeah. Did you meet any feminists that you hadn't met before? Yeah. Excellent, excellent.
Good.
Was that you lot? Did you
meet somebody? It was Lot, wasn't it?
Lot, did you meet somebody? Who did you meet? Are you here to pick up women, Lot? Because if so, good strategy.
I knew that you meant it that way when we went, did you meet anyone? You went, yeah.
Did you get your phone numbers, Lot? He did. Lot, just cheer if Lot got your phone number. Is Lot fit? What? Yeah, he's fit.
Okay. Someone just shoot their shot there. Mm. Yeah, he is. Well done, mate.
Okay, well done, fit Lot. All right, we've got to bring out our guests.
We do.
Our guests today are the director and cast of the new play Never Have I Ever, which is the play What I Wrote. Please welcome to the stage Emma Butler, Amit Shah and Greg Wise. Now, I need to say, Alexandra Roach wasn't feeling well tonight, and she's got to keep herself well for the play, so she hasn't come, but she did send an I'm a Feminist Bart, which is true. She said, I'm a Feminist Bart. When I was a teenager, I got nominated as a junior voice of my local council because I'd written a letter campaigning for Eclair's accessories. And she said, the irony is there still isn't a Claire's Accessories in my hometown, but I'm still campaigning, which is wonderful. Does anyone else here on the panel have an I'm a Feminist but that they'd like to offer? No obligation, but if you'd like to. Amit, you look like you want to.
Primed.
No, it's a bit risky, but...
Go for it, Amit. Roll that dice.
Well, maybe it's not. You'll laugh. Or maybe not. I'm a feminist. I'm a feminist, but I think men should be allowed to sit down when they pee as well. For two reasons. It's more comfortable. Three reasons. It's more comfortable.
You thought of the third reason on the fly there.
It's probably healthier for you. And also, if you can't aim, sit down.
Yes.
Yeah?
Good point.
I've spent most of my childhood wiping up old men's piss off the floor.
Your childhood?
Yeah, yeah.
I've never heard of that before. Was that like child labour? Are you Victorian?
It just bothers me. If I see urine on the floor, I need to wipe it up. And it's probably men who can't aim properly.
Mm. Yeah, so, no, I hear that.
Just sit down.
Listen, I don't see why men can't and don't. I mean, I know that the whole with this, the thing with the urinals is it's you.
You can still sit down. No. No.
Emma, you got one? Please have one.
Quick. I am a feminist, but the first time I met Deborah Frances White, I worried more about what I was going to wear than what I was going to say.
But you did look fine. And also what you said was, shall we do a play together? And now we're doing a play together. So,
hooray.
Greg, do you have anything?
I'm a feminist, but I had to phone my wife for her to tell me what to say.
Oh! What did she say?
Are you a feminist?
Oh!
He is.
Excellent. Okay, well, we've done our I'm a Feminist buts then in that case, so we should probably talk about the themes of this play. We're going to try and give you no spoilers, but we can set you up. I'm trying to do an elevator pitch for this play because people ask me what it's about, so let me try. So it's about a couple played by Amit Shah and Alexandra Roach who have a restaurant. And another couple is coming for dinner on a night when the restaurant would otherwise be closed. And that couple is Susan McComa and Greg Wise. And Greg Wise's character has invested in the restaurant, and Amit's character and Alexandra's character have to tell Greg's character that they've gone bankrupt, basically, and he's not going to get his money back. And they're very worried about doing that. But Greg's character, Tobin, his reaction is not what you'd think. And pretty soon they start playing a drinking game that they used to play at university because they all went to university together. And you know how those old friendships have, like, secrets in them?
Ooh.
All the old friendships with secrets.
Yeah.
And the play, and you shouldn't play. There's a drinking game called Never Have I Ever. Just give us a cheer if you've played it.
Woo!
Yeah, just give us a cheer if it's got you into trouble in some way.
Woo!
There you go. Yeah. You know what this play is then. And the play is about sex and money and friendship and love and identity, class, all sorts. And so that's the idea of the play. It's a lot of fun. You're like the fifth dinner party guest, and there's drinking, there's snogging, there's dancing, there's fun, there's lols, but also there's drama, tension, feminism, twists, turns, and agony. Is that
correct?
Did
you say agony?
Yeah, agony. I'd say agony. Agony and ecstasy. Yeah, that's what I'd say.
Brilliant.
I'm in emotional agony. You don't have to watch someone dismembered or anything. It's not one of those Martin McDonaghs. So first of all, why don't we go to Emma? Because Emma, you are the director of this play, and it sort of instigated the whole project.
I did. I am massive fan of The Guilty Feminist, and heard Deborah do some new writing on the podcast. I had some money for a workshop and emailed her via her agent and said, hey, I've got some money for a workshop. Have you got a play? I'd love to work with you. And she emailed back and said yes. And
I didn't know. That was a lie. I just had an idea for a play. but I thought I can write really fast if I have an embarrassing deadline. Because I have ADHD, and I read something today, actually, said with ADHD, the good news is I can work really fast to a deadline. The bad news is I can't work at all if not.
I mean, this is entirely true. Never have you ever met somebody who writes as fast as Deborah Frances White? With the first workshop we did, we'd come in on the next day and have an entirely new script. She would have written 50 pages overnight. So she's not lying.
That's probably a slight exaggeration. Maybe 15 pages, but no, I
was there. It was 50. It was a lot.
Yeah, I can write really... I can go down like a rabbit hole and if I stay up all night and, you know, that kind of thing. But I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for you. And I just had this idea kicking around in my head for a while about what if this happened and the themes that would go with it. And but you were able to evolve those themes. You were a resident director at the Almeida at the time.
Yes, which is who gave me the money and kind of facilitated the whole workshop in the first place. And we chatted a lot for several months and kind of developed what we thought it might be together. And then Deborah wrote it overnight. And then we... did a workshop and took lots of voices from the people in the workshop, and we've been developing it since, and now we're here.
Susan, I wrote the part of Adego for you.
You did. Hope you don't regret it.
Not at all. Do you remember the conversation when I phoned you and said I've written your part? Do you remember it?
I don't remember it, but I really love it when you say it.
Okay. This is what happened. I rang Susan and said, I've written a part for you. It's a workshop at the Almeida. And Susan said, what's the part? I said, she's posh. She said, I'll do it. She said, I never get asked to play posh. I've never been asked to play posh before. But a lot of the black women I know went to Wickham Abbey or something, or St. Paul's, yeah. And I didn't see a lot of that on the screen or on the stage.
Yeah.
And so I was really interested in writing about the intersection of race and class and gender and all sorts of different things. And you've been absolutely amazing in helping develop the work along with the creative team that have black people on it, because, you know, obviously we did not want you to be the only voice, but it's been a real privilege to write, because you've been very, very open and you give very fast feedback about what I'm getting wrong as a...
as you, a made that, you made that out like, no. I'm like, no, boo! Like, okay, also, here's an idea. I'm like, boo, shut up! I don't do that. No. The thing that's been really great, I really don't.
I'm getting right as well, but what I'm getting wrong.
No, but the thing that's been really great is I am really completely working class. And so that's why I said yes, because it's, you know, I love travelling towards a character and finding out loads about that person and having to change in that way rather than playing things that are very, very close to me. And I just had a run of playing characters that I understood the moment I read it. And that was, I didn't feel like I was getting better as an actor. I thought that I was fine. I thought that I was a safe pair of hands. And just
great big fuck off star, but continue. Okay.
See, this is why I was like, I love it when you tell it, because you say shit like that. But that's the reason why I said yes, because I just wanted to travel somewhere and not sort of always be so all-knowing. Of course, there are things that I understand about the character, but yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you have been very instrumental in development. You've been with it from the beginning. When we were lucky enough to get Chichester Festival Theatre to say they'd produce it, Greg, you were the next person on board. So we sent the script to you in hope that...
No, you stalked me.
Okay,
Deb.
All right. That might have happened.
You stalked me. I got quite scared.
I wasn't sitting out the front of your house in a van, which is what you make it sound like. How did I stalk you?
No, you...
Let me count the ways.
No, it was... I'd done my last play, I think, 8 years ago. And before that, it had been 17 years.
Oh, fuck, bloody hell, really?
So... even though I'm actually 13.
Nice one.
Because it all has to be... It's always... The decision is always made on the writing. And I honestly thought, after the last play, that's it, I'll never do another play again. And then the stalker turns up. And actually, I got my dear lady wife to read it first, who's a very good chum of yours as well. And she just read it and went, I didn't have to read it. I could say yes. just because.
So you didn't read it before you said yes?
No, of course I read it.
God, I just had a horrible thought that you just went, and then I signed on, and then I read it and went, oh, shit. I knew you read it before you said yes. I'm kidding.
It's always rising. And one of the things now, as a mature 13-year-old, I only want to do things now that scare me.
Mm.
And this absolutely fucking terrifies me.
That's interesting. Why does it terrify you?
Oh, Deb, shut up. You know why it terrifies me. Because I'm a feminist, but I'm playing a part that Deb's wrote, who isn't, by quite a long way. And it's exposing, and I find myself, there's only four of us on stage, from quite early on in the play, the dynamic shifts to me versus the world, which is obviously, I'm used to that being part of the patriarchy. But it's, I get to say things that don't sit easily in my mouth, which is great.
Mm.
But it's scary.
I mean, the thing is, Tobin, your character, he thinks he's a feminist, and when he starts the play, he thinks he's a feminist, but things come out and there's twists and turns around it. But he's not someone who overtly comes on going, ooh, I'm an MRA. You know, like he thinks he would identify as a feminist.
He's part of the crowd now who are hyper confused as to where they are because all the structures upon which everything was hung throughout one's childhood, schooling, adult life, and work, have all what the Scots would say, everything's on a sugarly peg. Now, you put your hat on a sugarly peg and your hat falls on the floor. So there's nothing to hang anything on anymore. So he's desperately trying, through his much younger wife, to try and learn the right things now to say and the right things to be, and says the things without necessarily the belief and the commitment backing them, but talks the talk very well until the moment where he stops talking the talk, which is where the drama sits. Mm. I didn't know if you know that as the playwright.
Yes, no. No,
she's sitting there going, really? I never knew.
No. I was so interested because we haven't really had this conversation. So I was becoming mesmerized and by what you were saying, and I was just very interested in, you know, your POV on it because you're playing that character, and I'm fascinated by what actors do where they inhabit a character, because I occasionally do a bit of acting, but honestly, it's when someone sort of says, "I've written this part for you," and I go, "No, I'll get a real actor," and they'll go, "No, you'll be really good." And the best way to get acting work is to claim you're not an actor and insist that you wouldn't be very good, because then people go, well, no, you're questioning my judgment. I know you'd be great in this. So very occasionally I do a bit, but it's always a heightened version of me, and I'm not somebody who can inhabit a character the way the four absolutely brilliant, very experienced, very talented actors in this play can. And it really fascinates me just getting into the skin of somebody who maybe you don't have a lot in common with, and what do you do? And I've learned a lot from Emma about how to talk to actors and how to listen to actors. But what is exciting is then you can really hot seat the character. You can write a character on a page, and then the actor brings the character to life, and then you can say to the character, what would you do in this situation? And the character can answer, which is so thrilling and exciting.
But what's great is that you let us do that, Deb. So a lot of times in rehearsal rooms, if it's a new play, we wouldn't always, definitely not in my experience, have the playwright there. Or it can be kind of quite restrictive, and sometimes that's great. It's a nice kind of, this is what it is and do this. But with you, because you're just naturally really collaborative, and I think that's because of all the improv that you and Tom have done over the years, it means that you do gift it to us, which is really incredibly generous and not the norm. I think we're all aware of that.
I can't imagine any playwright not wanting to listen to the actors so brilliantly inhabiting the characters and bringing them to life in the way that you are, because you know more than I do what Tobin would do, what Adago would do, or in fact what Cass would do. Amit, can you talk a bit about how you came to be working on this play and how it is for you?
Sorry, how I became...
Yeah, or just how you... What? Yeah, just say something about being Kaz. What a good question, Deborah. I've been doing this show for 7 years. Talk!
Well, I was last to come on board. I was so late that there's posters around with someone else on them.
The current posters have you on them.
Yeah. I remember being sent the script by my agent, and I read it and I said, do whatever you can to get me in this. And we didn't hear anything. And then she came back and said, we haven't heard anything, so I think they've moved on. I said, okay. And during this time, I was communicating with Alex because I'd worked with Alex. I've also worked with Susie and Greg too. But
you chose Alex. That's all I bloody heard. Interesting. So no, carry on.
Greg remembered me, and Susie, I don't know. Why.
No, we didn't actually work together that much. It was one scene in Crashing, two scenes in Crashing.
Two scenes in Crashing where you were drawing penises.
I was drawing penises, yes. Well, Greg, that's why she was like, do you want to play posh?
As soon as Greg came on board, he was saying, Amit Shah needs to be in this role.
Oh, that's very kind. Mm. Thanks,
so Greg did remember
the first
you.
Thing I said to everyone, forever.
Yeah.
Have you asked Amit?
Yeah. Greg was saying this episode, Greg definitely not only remembered you, but remembered to cast you.
Oh, well, I'm forever grateful. Thank you. And then it happened. I met Emma first, and we had a lovely chat. Then we had the National.
Yep.
And, yes, that's true. And
I can confirm that happened.
Yeah. And it's a real joy because Deb really does make this a collaborative experience. She does use her actors as much as possible and writes around us if there are any rewrites to be done or tweaks. And it's been really enjoyable. And it's been great to reconnect with Susie and then Greg and Alex. And we're a bit of a family now, aren't we? I love it. I'm genuinely having a lovely time. Even when I'm totally anxious and depressed, I'm enjoying that process.
Amit, we've decided Amit is the loveliest man in the world, and we adore. I mean, present company accepted, obviously. Joint loveliest men in the world, but even Greg has said Amit's the loveliest man in the world. Yep. He is, isn't he? Yeah. Yep.
Kaz is written as a people pleaser. You also said in the stage directions he's got impressive hair, but I'm thinning on the top. And I've started to use this Regain mousse. I've been using it for... No, genuinely. I've been using it for about 2 months. But it apparently takes about a year for it to work. Can you see? Look, it's there.
I can't really see, Amit, if I'm honest.
Are you serious?
No, you look
it's
very,
not,
you know,
it's
healthy.
It's thinning.
There's lots of hair.
It's not. It's not.
When
it's
I stand under a spotlight, you can see my scalp.
I don't think that's no. There's your hair is lustrous, luscious and lustrous. There's no, and even if you were thinning, there's nothing wrong with
there's
that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
It's okay. Bald men are meant to
be. How has this become like counselling for Amit?
My dad's bald. All my mum's brothers are bald. All my dad's brothers are bald.
Well, enjoy it while you've got it then.
Sorry?
Enjoy it while you've got it, because you won't have it forever, clearly. Genetics will out. But right now...
Yes. She's like, oh my God, I didn't have a good timer.
Right now, you've got hot hair, so enjoy the hot hair. That's all I can say. This is not how I thought this was going to go. but I'm enjoying it very much. Emma, yes. Can you
have you
are...
got all your hair, Emma?
Yes.
Can
yes,
you stand
I do.
Under a spotlight for
yeah,
us?
Look, Susie.
Is that all right?
Yeah, we're doing all right.
Confirmed.
Great.
Emma, who has all her own hair and teeth.
hang on, we didn't confirm about the
wrong
teeth.
Wrong with my teeth.
Emma, could you speak? You're the captain of our ship. So if I'm collaborative, it's only because you run a collaborative ship and allow me to be collaborative, because Emma is the boss. That's the job of the director, and Emma creates a very collaborative space, and we think alike on that. But Emma, you have to run all of the team, the company, everybody. Can you speak a little bit to the themes of the play and what made you want to develop and direct this play?
Yes, I'd love to. Firstly, it's very easy to be a collaborative director when you have such a supremely talented group of people in the room, because you just want to collaborate with you. I want to collaborate with you all. So that's you make my life incredibly easy. And I wanted to do this play because it talks so eloquently and at times it challenges you on the idea that we are all very different people, whoever we are, whatever we look like, however we identify, and we need to celebrate that and we need to work hard to understand and respect those differences and then build bridges between these people, between each other. And that's a message that I love and speaks very profoundly to me. And being able to lead that room and rehearse this play with the people building bridges with each other is a privilege for me.
Susan?
Yeah?
Are there any themes in the play or characteristics that Adego has that you would like to talk about in terms of a feminist filter or a world-changing filter?
Yeah. What's quite interesting is what's happened in the last kind of 4 or 5 years where black women, particularly in the sort of, in the age of social media, you know, I've, for instance, there's so many, when I was younger, there was not many figures that I knew who were kind of my peers or around my age talking about the things that meant a lot to me. And now there's so many people, there's so many commentators, there's so many, you know, there's so many voices. And I do think that social media is a large part of that because now you don't have to be approved to get on TV or to write in print. Like, you can get your ideas out there, which is an amazing thing, but also it's, you know, it's one of the reasons why I left Twitter. I don't think it's healthy to know that much or to know that many people's opinions. But I think that Adego is somebody who has really kind of benefited from this boom of conversation, and it means that she can have access to people and rooms, and she enjoys that. And I think that, you know, what I find really interesting about her and women like her is how do you remain an activist and talking on really important ideas and subjects, and then, you know, when it sort of skews into like being a kind of, for want of a better word, an influencer, even like somebody who, you know, gets loads of privileges and, you know, makes a living off this. Like, I have a lot of friends who are writing all these books, and it's, and for them it's mining their lived experience, which is good, but also a lot of that lived experience is your trauma, like, and then that becomes your business, and then like, where is the line? And I had a small tiny glimpse of that during lockdown when George Floyd was murdered. And all of a sudden, I was being tagged in all these kind of people's lists of, you know, really smart, intelligent black people to follow, which I was like, as you've seen tonight, not a good idea.
Not true at all.
Let's not do that. And but it was, I got a little window into that, and my inbox was just full of trauma, and like people sending me videos of people being murdered and going, why aren't you speaking on this? Why aren't you speaking on that? And it made me angry because of, like, just piss off. But also, it made me think, God, imagine if that is how you've placed yourself. You're writing the books, you're going on Newsnight, you're doing all of that. And when something horrific happens, people are looking, as you know, people are looking to you to speak. And so I've just always found it interesting and always sort of worried and cared and, you know, been concerned about particularly black women who find themselves in these spaces where they're making careers off, you know, this kind of discussion. But, like, it's you. Like, it's not theoretical. It's not theoretical. So that's what's been really interesting, playing Adego and exploring in the room.
Really, really interesting. This is really helpful, actually.
You've got to be 50 new pages tomorrow.
Absolutely. Greg, what do you like about Tobin, and how do you hope it will build bridges, if you, in fact, you do hope that, with an audience who come to see it?
I think an essential thing for me, and I would like to hear the other actors' take on this, is, as an actor, you cannot judge your character. We have our morals. We have our lived experience. We have to forget all that and play the morals and the lived experience of the person we're playing. That doesn't mean that you don't absolutely have to understand their drive and their commitment.
I'm learning so much from being in the room with everyone. Because, of course, my world as an actor is super different because we are circus folk. We are traveling troubadours. We have always been kind of the thing on the soles of the feet of the patriarchy in many ways, even as white straight males, as actors. So I'm having to try and understand the world that my chap's inhabiting. And it is hard. And I feel his pain. I absolutely feel his pain. Then I have to play his pain, and what his pain does, no spoilers, you all have to come and see it. It's really good. I'm particularly marvellous in this piece of work. It'd be quite surprising, because the last time you saw me would have been Strictly. So this is quite different.
It is quite different from Strictly, I'll give you that.
To
not that much.
we tried to put in a samba, he wouldn't have it.
But that's what's great about drama. You use someone's pain, and what a chap does with pain a lot of the time is inflict pain with his pain. And this is what plays out in this piece, which is marvellous.
Yeah, I think wherever you're coming from, hopefully you're going to see somebody else's point of view. And Cass, the character of Cass, played by Amit, somehow inhabits that view. Can you talk a bit about what made you... Because you said when you read it, you really wanted to do it. What made you want to do it?
Well, at the time, I was trying to avoid comedy. But when you read something like this, and it comes from a very truthful place, so the comedy's not there trying to be funny, but you've written something very real. And that's when I think comedy is strongest, when it comes from a very truthful place, when the stakes are high, when it matters. And there are moments where our characters say ridiculous things, but it's very truthful to where they are at that given moment. But I just think, well, Debs, you write dialogue really well, and for different types of characters, mm-hmm. and each character has his or her own voice, and they use their own vocabulary in their own way. So to be able to do that, I think, is some kind of magic trick, because you're able to inhabit different characters. And I don't know whether you do this, but I feel like some writers, when they write, they don't say it out loud, but I feel like you possibly do, because it's so natural to deliver, and all the rhythm of it, it just feels very natural. And for actors, it's very easy to deliver and enjoy as well. So I really commend you for that.
Thank you, Amit. You are the loveliest man in the world. equal first. Yeah, I do say it out loud. And I think you write good dialogue if you're a performer, because though I don't do a lot of acting, I do a lot of stand-up comedy, and I'm on stage a lot, and I know the rhythms that will make something funny or make something not funny, and sometimes you need to make something not funny. If you make something funny, sometimes you undermine it. So in a play like this, I want it to be funny, 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 funny. Oh, really not fucking funny. You know, like that's the sort of game of it.
And that's your superpower, I'd say.
Well, thank you very much. I had no idea. This is my origin story. I always say it out loud, because if I wouldn't want to stand on stage and deliver it, I don't want to ask anybody else to. And I think sometimes that's what playwrights... And
they don't care about that.
And
they'll give you
TV
the most
writers.
Flowery like sentence and like, please say it. And you're like, the daffodils are dancing on the head of the unicorn. And you're like, please don't make me do that in front of my agent. They're like, do it. But that is such a good point. You can tell that it's not just that, oh, I don't want to make an actor go through it. You understand the endeavor of performance. And I don't want to shit on theatre, but like oftentimes people, particularly if there are a lot of plays in, they forget the endeavour of performance and how exposing it is and scary.
And it just feels like you've thought of every possibility of what that experience for the actor would be like. You've got, like, respect for it, I think, for actors. You like actors.
I love actors, and I also think, there's something about... Sometimes I've had TV execs, when I've been writing TV scripts, say, that's not funny, that would get a laugh. And I have literally said to them, I said that on stage last night, and it got a huge laugh. And I can play back, you know, if I sometimes use something in dialogue, they don't know funny. They sit sometimes, you know, some do. I work with some very good people at the moment, but a lot of execs they just read it in the script, they're reading it flash on the page, and they don't know how it'll be delivered. Well, I love working with great actors like you, and I keep saying to Emma, I can't believe how lucky we've got, because we've got like 4 stars, and Alexandra Roach is incredible as well in her part of Jack. And it's just such an amazing thing to have people with funny bones and very dramatic bones who know when to hold them and know when to fold them and know when to throw it away. And it's just such a privilege. And sometimes I don't know how you're going to say it. In my mind, I've heard it like this, but then you'll say it like that, and I think, oh, no, that's better. And partly it's better because that's what's coming out of you as an actor, and that's what you're bringing to it. But you're also very collaborative as well. So if I go, what I had in mind for that is, could it be a bit more like this or this intention? And you try not to, you should never ever give a line reading and say it like this. You know, Emma's brilliant at sort of saying, could the intention be this, that? You know, you immediately, all of you will go, got it. And I think working out where things are funny and where things need to pull back and be serious. And I think a lot of, for me, you can do a lot more to change the world with comedy than people realise. People always want to do really serious dramas about people dying and being sad and punching each other. And I'm like, George Bernard Shaw, who, listen, was extremely progressive in many ways and in other ways was a big fan of eugenics. So, you know, very controversial figure. He did a lot of plays that did create social progress, you know, Pygmalion and Major Barbara, all sorts of plays about class and gender and stuff. And he said, if you want to tell people the truth, make them laugh or they'll kill you. And there's something in that. I have no interest in being killed, so I've written a comedy. But that, I think, is true. And I think some of the most impactful parts of the play is when we've got these 4 brilliant comedic actors with this incredible timing. And a lot of the stuff that I think is going to get people's armor down, if they are feeling more in the Tobin seat, is what's funny. It's what's funny.
Could I say something about Emma?
You say something about Emma, and then I want to say something about Alex, because Alex isn't here.
Great.
But we should talk about it. But Emma's superpower is that she...
Nervous now.
She has an amazing ability to guide us and explore where the shifts in tone are within a scene. And those gear shifts are, I think, the moments where the audience do go forward, and that's when they're engaged, and when those shifts happen. And they're the, you know, most interesting parts of the scene sometimes. So that's what I found very enjoyable in terms of working with Emma, that she has this great respect for your writing and exploring where these shifts in tone happen, so that when you're making someone laugh, you can suddenly switch and deliver a line which really hits you hard. So thank you, Emma.
Thank you.
Oh.
Susie?
I just want to be a bit sycophantic about Alex Roach, who isn't here. Alex, I don't want to speak for her, but she's not here and her presence is missed. And Alex and I, we went to drama school together, so I've known her since I was 19. And Alex at school was, I think, the best actress by a long while in our year, a really fierce actress. And there were certain experiences at drama school that meant that her career was more screen. And I've been saying to her for years, and a lot of other people have been saying to her for years who have had the pleasure of seeing her on stage, that she's got to come back. So the fact that this has all happened, and it really did happen, like, I didn't mention Alex to you or anything. I just got a call from Alex saying, I've been offered this play.
your name's attached, are you doing it? I'll do it if you do it. And I thought, game on, because you get to see her finally. And yeah, she's absolutely smashing it. And this character could only really be played with somebody with that kind of quiet fierceness that Alex has in spades, and also loud fierceness. And it's so amazing that I can come to work and I'm working with my sister, one of my best friends, and then another best friend, and then, you know, people that I've not met before, and you, Amit, who I've, you know, we sort of passed each other ships in the night on another job. It's unbelievable, because you see some of these people on television, I'm not going to be mean, not mean actually, you see people who work with their friends and the people they went to university with and was in Footlights with and all those sorts of things. And I've always, I know that some people sort of go, oh, they seem like a clique and, you know, boohoo to that. But I've always gone, yeah, I understand why you want to work with your friends because they're your collaborators. And I've always been searching for that, like, who are my collaborators? And so this really is the first time that I've worked with I was going to name one of them, but I was trying to think whether they're problematic, and I've decided they are. So I'm not going to call you his name. But no, it's been really cool to sort of find my troupe. Yeah.
As well as her fierceness, I think she's got an amazing ability to show her vulnerability as well. Because Alex and I are playing a couple, I look into her eyes and she delivers her lines with such truth. And I've said this to you, Debs, I just feel like I'm about to cry, even when the moment doesn't require it. But she's just a wonderful actress. And I'm so glad I'm
doing this job with her. And then with all of that can also be incredibly funny.
So funny.
Yes, she's very, very funny. Very, very funny. Can you speak a bit to the relationship, because your biggest relationship in the play, Greg, is your character Tobin's relationship with Adego, who's your wife. Can you speak a bit about playing a relationship like that?
I don't know if you can tell because we're quite far away from you, but I'm quite a lot older than Susie. which does get quite a few laughs in the play, and I asked Deb to put another laugh line in, just making sure that people really did know that I was a great deal older than everyone else on stage. The sort of shtick of it is the collection of someone who will give him, as is talked about at the end of the piece, give him so much kudos, having on his arm not just a younger woman, but a powerful, younger, black woman, that he trades off both in his professional life and in his personal life. It's not a love story between these two people, but we have to believe that they were in love, that they are together when they enter. It's always very difficult playing a character that has a side to it or has... he's not evil, but has difficulties when we're viewing him through the eyes of our heroine figure, and we have to not have an issue with her having fallen in love with him. We have to be able to fall in love with him in a certain way as well. So that's one of the things that I'm always interested in doing. I've played an awful lot of psychopaths over my time, and murderers and paedophiles and various things, and If you're able to find within a piece, within a script, talk to the director, say, just allow some moment where the audience can go, oh, I understand. I might not like what you're doing or respect what you're doing, but I understand why you're doing it.
I've always said to Debs, and you know, we have to believe that they're in love, that they're together, that they made the choice to be together. And this play really cleverly explores those choices. You get people going, oh, this is my preference, this is what I like, da da da. And what Deborah's writing encourages you to do is go, why? Why? And that's what we see with Adego and Tobin, is they examine why. Why is this? Why is this? I think that what
Debs has done is that you kind of body hop from each character and you see certain bits of the play through their eyes really, really well. And I think it's important that we understand why we're married, why the four of us are friends, how that came to pass. And I think that that has been conveyed really well and in a really fun way as well.
I also flip back and forth in my understanding or allegiance to these characters. And there's times when I'm like, I do feel for Tobin, and I've had, you know, people, we've had all sorts of people on the creative team over the development process and in this room say, I understand Tobin and I've never really understood that point of view before. And we've had a couple of young people who've been on our creative team who've gone, I get it. I get how he's feeling. And that's, I think that's incredibly important. Of course, you, I think, largely are on more on the side of Adego. But
of course,
you're not never on the side of Tobin. As long as you understand Tobin and you see that humanity, I think that's the main thing. But, you know, is there anything, Amit, that you came to say that you didn't get to say? Anything you came tonight?
Tonight?
Tonight. Is there anything you wanted to say that you were like, oh, I hope I get to say that, that you didn't get to say?
Okay.
About the play, about
like
life,
to,
about feminism?
Do a shout out to our stage management team and Chai.
Hey, you're there.
Lou,
I can't see anything.
Olivia, is Georgia here? And Chai. And Chai's our movement director.
Are you there?
And I will add... I will add a shout out to the associate director, Devassa, as well.
Oh, yes.
Are you here?
Sorry.
Who,
Emma, is there anything you came to say that you didn't get to say about this play or about theatre in general or about anything? Feminism... This is your shot on The Guilty Feminist. Anything you came to say, you didn't get to say. I always ask people this at the end, because sometimes someone came with something to say, and then you get backstage and they go, oh, I didn't say this. And so I just want, that's just anything you want to say at all. You don't have to have anything, but if there's anything you'd like to say.
No, I'm just thrilled, and I can't believe my luck that I get to do this. And I used to listen to The Guilty Feminist walking around a park to cheer me up in 2015 when I was sad. And now... I am working with you and doing one of your episodes, and it's just wonderful. So thank you. Thank you for trusting me with your play.
Thank you. Thank you for dropping me an email and saying, hey, should we do something together? Because it's turned out really well so far.
So far.
Yeah.
We'll let you know in a week.
Yeah. Susie, anything you came to say you didn't get to say?
I think that I can safely say that I've said enough. Thank you. It's been lovely to be back.
Amazing. Thank you so much for coming and co-hosting. It's been brilliant. Greg, anything you came to say you didn't get to say?
I would just like to shout out to the entire audience who've sat here listening to people talking about something that they haven't seen. and listening properly. Because I know when you've lost a house, and we haven't lost you, so thank you so much. You all will have to come and see the play. I am terribly good in it.
Here's. They all are genuinely terribly good. They are really, really good. And very kind things have been said about the writing, but honestly, these people could have an absolute pile of shit and they would make it into something amazing. They are very, very, very good. Listen, we want to say a huge thanks to Chichester Festival Theatre for having us, and also to Francesca Moody and Eleanor Lloyd for producing the play, and for everyone here at Chichester who are making it a reality. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation about how... you know, actors inhabit characters and the feminist themes of it, and I hope you come and see it. But I also, it's just been such a joy to bring The Guilty Feminist here, and no matter what happens with the play, we'd love to come back and see you again. You're not far away. We can jump on the train. As Greg said, you've been a terrific audience, and I'm very heartened and excited now to see Chichester audiences see this play. I'm going to go out on a limb and say you've been one of the finest audiences of your generation. Can I have a huge round of applause for Amit Shah, Emma Butler, Susan McComa, Greg Wise. I've been Deborah Francis White. We've been The Guilty Feminists. Thank you. Good night. You have been listening to The Guilty Feminists with me, Deborah Francis White, guest co-host Susan McComa, our very special guests, Emma Butler, Amit Shah, and Greg Wise. Music is by Mark Hodge, produced by Tom Prince, for the Smash 8 Shop, thanks to Rachel Croft and Gina Lucio, Zainab Ahmed, everyone at the Pitcher Festival Theatre, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com. But backstage here at Chichester Theatre, I should say Chichester Festival Theatre, shouldn't I actually get it right? I'm a feminist, but backstage, the great thing about a podcast is you can take things again. There'll be loads in the show tonight that will never make the recording just because some of it will be libelous. Now, and some of it will be this, but you pay extra to hear the errors, but also the dirt. Okay. I'm a feminist, but backstage here at Chichester Festival Theatre, I was slightly tempted to try on...
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.